Nantucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
To the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5, 6 minutes after the hour on this Thursday morning. We do appreciate you listening as always. Still to come from Breitbart News, where I also work. Francis Martel, we'll talk a little the globalist approach to Earth Day. Lots to talk about climate change and curbing carbon emissions, which, that seems like a lot of foreign policy. It does impact our domestic policy in significant ways. So we'll have that discussion here in about a half hour. Please stay tuned. Joining us now, becoming a regular on the show, but also now happy to announce you could watch him on The V on with Bill Britz, Alabama political reporter, his weekly show. I think it airs here on Sundays, but all over the state. Former state senator Rusty Glover is on the line with us. Good morning, Senator. How are you doing?
Good morning, Jeff. Yes, a couple of Mondays ago, I got a call from Bill Britz saying he's been getting a lot of complaints over the last few weeks about how the show's kind of drifting to the left more and more, and they need a conservative on there to kind of help balance things out. And I said, sure. So. We did that for it was the second, last Sunday was the second episode, and it does air, 9 o'clock, just following Fox News Sunday at 9 o'clock on, WLA Channel 10.
I watch your facial expressions after our friend Josh Boone speaks. But you haven't really had it out yet. I suspect you're not going to, but, I do detect a little frustration at times.
Well, he really came out with an outrageous utterance last week, but it ran at the end of the segment, and of course, Bill was moving on to a couple of three or four other topics the next segment, so I never got a chance. And unlike Firing Line with Buckley or Crossfire, well, but Firing Line wasn't, but the McLaughlin group, yeah. It's like a verbal wrestling match where they're just hollering at each other. The producer asked that we not speak over the others, and we have to wait till the other one finishes before we can start. So it kind of limits the combativeness of the program, but it goes over well.
Issue two, I know, but that is, I guess it's hard to do. Y'all are doing it over Zoom or Skype or something like that as well, which there's a little bit of a pause, a little bit of a delay makes it a little tricky to navigate.
Does. It does.
Well,
it does.
Congratulations on that. Look forward to seeing you on that. I watch that show pretty regularly. It is a good sense of I think that whatever you want to say about APR and political reporter, it's at least it's something out there. And I think there's just a lack of in this state when it comes to talking about what's going on statewide. I know these guys at APR take a lot of knocks for where they stand on some issues and who they go after or who they side with, but at least they're talking about that subject matter.
That's right, right. So many people are familiar with what's going on in Washington, but not as familiar with what's going on in Montgomery, and it shows. You know, a legislator walks around. Hey, how's life in Washington? You know, we're in Montgomery. There is a lack of knowledge of what's going on in Montgomery right now.
And we didn't really sit off to talk about this, but that's always been. It's always been a struggle for, I think, this part of the state because it feels so isolated from the rest of the state. Southwest Alabama is really having a connection to Montgomery. It feels more connected to, Mississippi Gulf Coast and the Florida Gulf Coast because it's so far away. And they feel isolated in their respective states. So, you feel like it's more regional, more in common with other sides of the state lines, whereas a lot of your decision-making is going on in Montgomery, and then maybe that, for better or for worse, kind of puts us at a, I would say probably for worse, makes people feel like they're just not part of that discussion.
And of course the media market, which has Florida and Mississippi in it, there's been probably more this year in the last few weeks, news stories about Montgomery. A lot of it's pertaining to the gambling issue because it's a big interest. Those for and against it are very interested to see what's going on in Montgomery. Traditionally we don't really get a lot of coverage, what's going on in Montgomery.
Well, and then you realize when you have an issue like the BP oil spill settlement or the toll bridge and the way Montgomery, you know, they can push stuff off on this part of the state and barely have an impact on the Huntsville to Montgomery corridor there, then it tends to lend itself to being a disadvantage for this part of the state.
Oh, sure. And if you look at the delegation, the ratio, there's 13% of the legislature is from Mobile and Ballin County. And so, where there's a much higher percentage in Birmingham and the suburbs of Birmingham, that they have a little bit more of a leverage on the legislature than we do. And so that you know, the BP oil situation and some other issues that have come up, it really kind of put a hamstring on us.
Yeah, if this part of the state gets in the game and the media, I think the media does their part in making this more of a focus, then you'll find maybe more people care. That has an added benefit of keeping, you know, the bad stuff that Montgomery wants to impose on this part of the state from happening.
Sure, that's right.
Senator, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well,
I was just going to say, you know, we're getting close to the edge, end of the session, and, you know, there's some interesting bills that are being passed all the way through, and many of them will die. You know, as Nathaniel Ledbetter just mentioned, you know, it's probably 1,300 or 1,400 bills introduced, and probably about 300 will be signed into law, and a lot of the bills are bills that, you know, people don't really have a lot of interest in. They're nonpartisan. Usually passed with unanimous votes, but there were a couple of bills that were passed in the last couple of days I think people have a lot of interest in. One was the bill dealing by Debbie Wood, Representative Debbie Wood from Valley. Her mother died alone in a hospital room. She wasn't able to visit her, and I think a lot of people around the state can relate to this, having loved ones who died, whether it was COVID or not. They were not able to visit with them in their hospital rooms as they were passing away because of the COVID restrictions. And her bill is going to mandate that the hospital allow loved ones to be with them in their not only in their dying moments, but also to be with them while they're being infirmed. And I think this is a very good bill. And I think it was a lot of frustration with people around the state. And Garland Gudger got it through the Senate. He's from Cullman. And I think that's something that people will be very happy with. And of course, you know, I think y'all mentioned maybe yesterday about the civil assets force.
Right, right. That bill heralded, we finally got civil asset forfeiture solved in this state. We've been talking about it, it seems like, for the last 5-10 years. But looking at this second glance, it's a very watered-down approach. I don't think it is goes nearly far enough. It doesn't seem like the solution we've been waiting for.
Well, you know, and I think the situation in Castleberry, and I think it was a couple of other instances where law enforcement seized money, and it really wasn't related to the illegal act that they were being accused of, and it was really, I think in Castleberry, it was just suspicion. You can't have that kind of money and not be doing something wrong, and it was a very bad situation, and. But, however, talking to the district attorneys, local district attorneys, the State District Attorneys Association, they were saying if you just do away with the civil assets forfeiture law, it's going to greatly hamper our ability to prosecute drug cases. And so there had to be a happy medium there. And in the Senate caucus, you know, where we sit and meet, you know, all 27 Republican senators, we'd have people coming in to visit us to talk about this particular bill we've never seen before. They're from left-wing groups, and they're all for this and telling us why we should vote for it. And, of course, we got red flags flying up everywhere just because of what these groups are about. And then we go and talk to the District Attorney Association folks, and they're absolutely saying no way, and law enforcement also. And for years, it didn't seem to be much of a connect of the two groups getting together, and the district attorney, I don't know if they were even approached for compromise, but apparently there was a compromise made where they can continue to do what they need, plus some civil liberties or many of the civil liberties that were being infringed upon by those victims of having their assets frozen or taken without any kind of due process whatsoever, you know, they're going to get something out of this. So I think they're moving in the right direction. There may not have gone far enough, but however, you know, listen to the DAs talk about the why they have to have this process for leverage, if nothing else, for these accused. It's been about 5 or 6 years since Arthur Orr first introduced it. And I think he introduced it just about every year, and then it just never got anywhere. It passed the Senate, still got to go through the House, but I think it's going to go through, and there may be some changes made that may be able to help protect the civil liberties of folks in the future. But I think they did pass the milestone.
I think the problem with like Castleberry was this: they would seize assets, and it would become, they would make it too much of a hassle to get your assets back.
That's
if
right.
You weren't doing anything wrong. That look, maybe we don't outright outlaw asset forfeiture, but maybe make it not as so punitive. Where if you're driving down to buy a new car and you're carrying a big sum of cash to the Pensacola or whatever, and you had to go through Castleberry, Alabama, where they can't just take your money and make it more expensive to get the money back than it was, where they had to sue and you had to hire an attorney, and that becomes very costly. Well, at some point somebody says, well, it's just not worth dealing with it, the cost and the expense to fight, you know, this little town in Alabama, so I'm just going to walk away from it. And there's got to be a way to make sure that these guys, if they have seized assets for the wrong reasons, then they can't make it that difficult to get back. Or maybe they have to pay some kind of penalty, interest or something, for holding an asset where they didn't, right, there was no crime committed.
Right. And I agree. And I don't believe it was an isolated case. I think that this was happening across the state, probably not as much as some of the promoters of the bill were saying, but it was happening. And it really put us in a dilemma, because we understand what these folks were having to go through to get their money back, and the innocent people, but yet we were having to deal with, you know, the local district attorneys, and they were adamant about making too many changes that would curtail their ability to prosecute folks. So it put us in a really bind, and I was happy to see that they did come with a compromise that both sides can live with. But yes, you're right. It was having to get lawyers and pay all this money to try to get some of your money back. It was a huge dilemma, a problem for these folks, a burden trying to get their money back. And I'm very, very happy to see that was taken care of, or at least it's halfway done. It's got to go to the House still.
Yeah, well, and then we're kind of running a little short on time here, but getting stuff through the House right now, and we've had this discussion, I think, in the past, the Senate being not really the deliberative body. Now you just have this backlog of all these bills. Do you think there's going to be a whole lot done with just these few days remaining left to go? It does seem like done is kind of done.
I think that the bills that the leadership, which would be the Speaker of the House and the pro tems, the bills that they are most interested in, they will get passed. They can get by a filibuster through a cloture vote, but there will be a lot of bills that'll be left behind, as they are usual most years. Because right now they were the Senate is passing election reform laws that are badly needed. And right now, they're banning curbside voting. That's being debated right now, or it was a few minutes ago. And so I think they're probably going to be using quite a few cloture today. But they're trying to avoid as many having to go to cloture as they can, because it does disrupt, you know, any member, all 140 members of the legislature can call for the reading of a bill. And this can take many, many, many hours, especially when it gets to the budgets. They still got to pass the budgets through both houses. And that can be very tedious. I remember Mark Cahey from Grove Hill. He was upset about redistricting, the redistricting map, which put him at a disadvantage. So he had every bill read at length, which took hours and hours and hours. And even the budget, one night we went so late that we adjourned at 11:58, went back into session at 12:02, and then about 30 minutes later, an hour later, he called for the budget to be read because it was about to be passed. what I did, I left the state house, drove home, taught school for free because I couldn't get paid because we were in session. So I taught school for free. Then I went back to Montgomery and was still an hour left of the bill to be read. So that is they can shut down the legislature for a couple of very valuable days just by having the budgets read. And that I fully intend that to happen if things go off the rail in either house.
Well, I mean, that says a lot about government, that it takes, a computer 2 days to read the budget. Maybe the problem isn't necessarily having the bill read. It's just the size of the budget. But that's what government is, and the scope of government does so much in our lives. Senator, we're short on time here. We got to get to a break. But I want to thank you for making time for us, as always.
Yes, sir. Look forward to doing it again. Talk to you soon.
All right. That was former State Senator Rusty Glover. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Same to me. I've done it many times.